In today's installment of our collective nightmare, we find ourselves once again in the theater of absurdity that is American politics. Pam Bondi, who had been hiding like a groundhog seeing its shadow after the Epstein files fallout, has resurfaced to tighten her grip on the Justice Department. And what a grip it is, like trying to hold onto a bar of soap in a prison shower. Bondi's return from media exile was heralded by her strategic move to install a new co-deputy FBI director alongside Dan Bongino. Bongino, you may recall, had his own little spat with Bondi over the Epstein debacle and threatened to resign. But let's be honest, threats are as common as broken promises here. The whole Epstein saga was supposed to be behind her now, or so they say. The president's MAGA loyalist base had erupted into chaos over an unsigned memo affirming Epstein died by suicide. A memo that, essentially said, "Nothing more to see here, folks," while everyone else screamed, "Show us the files." And yet here we are, with Bondi back on Fox News acting like she's just returned from vacation instead of a public relations nightmare. No questions about Epstein were asked, because why would anyone want answers? Instead, she focused on Trump's federal takeover of Washington, D.C.'s police force for some good old-fashioned crime crackdown theatrics. Meanwhile, Andrew Bailey joins this circus as another Trump cheerleader at the FBI. A not-so-subtle hint that Bongino might soon be out of his seat. But don't worry. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt assures us it's all part of their master plan for credible and experienced hands. Because if there's one thing this administration excels at, it's keeping up appearances. Despite attempts to sweep everything under the rug and tiptoe back into the spotlight without tripping over any landmines labeled Epstein, potential disasters still loom large. House Republicans have subpoenaed those elusive investigative files while Democrats sharpen their knives for future hearings. Through it all, Bondi remains unfazed, a loyal soldier in Trump's army willing to burn bridges rather than build them if it means staying in favor with the boss man himself. Her value lies not in justice but loyalty, a concept that's become synonymous with survival these days. So America continues down its path where truth is subjective, and accountability gets lost somewhere between cable news segments and political spin doctors' offices. The perfect setting for our collective nightmare indeed.
Welcome to First World Problems, where we tackle the issues that are truly plaguing modern society, like why your favorite K-pop band isn't also a demon hunting squad. Yes, folks, Netflix has unleashed K-pop Demon Hunters, and it's breaking records faster than you can say Gangnam Style. It's an animated film featuring a girl group that not only sings catchy tunes but also saves humanity from soul-sucking demons. Because clearly, just topping the charts isn't enough anymore. They have to save the world while doing it. Imagine being in a boardroom where someone says, "You know what this industry needs? More demon-fighting pop stars." And everyone agrees, this is what happens when you let algorithms dictate creativity. It's like letting a Roomba decide your interior design. The soundtrack is so popular, it's charting alongside classics like Saturday Night Fever. Which means somewhere out there, John Travolta is probably wondering if he should start hunting ghosts to stay relevant. Meanwhile, Ian Eisendrath, the music producer behind this phenomenon, is living his best life as songs from an animated movie about musical exorcists climb the Billboard Hot 100. And because Netflix knows you're not content with merely watching these pixelated pop warriors on your couch, they're bringing them to theaters for a sing-along event. Yes, now you can belt out soda pop in public without judgment, or at least with less judgment than usual. So here we are, debating whether our next concert ticket should come with holy water and garlic necklaces. But hey, at least we've found a way to make K-pop even more dramatic. Because if there's one thing first world audiences love more than catchy choruses and synchronized dance moves, it's supernatural melodrama. In conclusion, thank goodness for first world problems like these, where our biggest worry is whether our favorite fictional pop stars are adequately equipped to handle demonic threats between their world tours.
Ah, the United States in 2025, a place where federal agencies have become playgrounds for political theater, and the art of governance has been replaced by a never-ending reality TV show. President Donald Trump, fresh off his re-election, has decided to channel his inner dramatist once again by calling for Fed Governor Lisa Cook's resignation over alleged mortgage fraud. Because nothing says stable economy like undermining your central bank officials on social media. The allegations come courtesy of Bill Pult, Trump's loyal ally and self-appointed watchdog of fiscal morality. Paulte claims that Cook committed the cardinal sin of declaring two properties as her primary residence, an oversight so heinous it apparently warrants a full-scale investigation by the Justice Department. After all, who needs due process when you can just tweet your way to justice? Cook, however, is not backing down from this digital kangaroo court. She insists that she won't be bullied out of her position at the Federal Reserve over accusations circulated in 280 characters or less. But let's be honest, facts are such an inconvenience when you're trying to orchestrate a public takedown. Meanwhile, Paulte is busy playing both judge and jury from behind his smartphone screen. He assures us that his crusade against Cook is purely apolitical, because nothing screams neutrality like being Trump's vocal mouthpiece, while simultaneously launching attacks on Fed Chair Jerome Powell for not lowering interest rates fast enough to suit Trump's economic fantasies. As the Senate Banking Committee prepares to consider Steven Mnuchin for a spot on the Fed's board, a move that could conveniently tip the scales toward more Trump-friendly policies, one can't help but marvel at how effortlessly politics masquerades as policy these days. In this dystopian saga, where accountability takes a backseat to spectacle and governance becomes a farce played out in tweets and soundbites, it's comforting to know that our future is being shaped by those who see democracy as little more than a stage for their next performance. Welcome to America 2025, where every day is another episode in the Daily Dose of Dystopia.
Welcome, dear listeners, to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the big questions while laughing at the absurdity of it all. Today's topic: Abu Dhabi's ambitious bid to dethrone Orlando as the theme park capital of the world, a tale of sand, roller coasters, and existential dread. According to CNN Travel's article titled, Abu Dhabi, the UAE capital is on a quest to redefine its identity from oil-rich desert oasis to adrenaline-fueled playground. It's a place where you can scream your head off on the world's fastest roller coaster and then contemplate your existence under a dome designed by Jean Nouvel at the Louvre Abu Dhabi. Because nothing says existential crisis quite like pondering art's meaning after surviving a 240 kilometers per hour ride. But let's pause for a moment. What does this say about us as humans? Are we so desperate for distraction that we'll travel halfway around the world just to experience air-conditioned thrills in a climate-controlled bubble? We used to chase enlightenment. Now we chase record-breaking loops and culturally themed lands. Is this progress or merely an elaborate way to avoid thinking about life's bigger questions? Disney has chosen Abu Dhabi for its next theme park venture, bypassing traditional locales like California and Japan. Why? Perhaps it's because Abu Dhabi offers something truly unique. An existential buffet where culture meets entertainment meets luxury, an ironic reflection of our own fragmented lives. As we wander through these meticulously crafted worlds, are we not simply characters in someone else's story? Our lives reduced to mere footnotes in a brochure promising year-round comfort and frictionless travel. The irony is palpable, seeking authenticity in artificial realms while ignoring the very real complexities outside their gates. In this race against Orlando, Abu Dhabi seems less concerned with competition than with crafting an identity that transcends mere amusement. Yet isn't it amusing how both cities offer us escapism wrapped in different packages, one drenched in Florida sunshine, the other shielded from desert heat by air-conditioned corridors? So here we find ourselves, oscillating between thrill-seeking and introspection, questioning whether our pursuit of happiness is nothing more than an endless loop on Ferrari World's fastest ride. As Yas Island transforms from barren sand into a bustling resort, one can't help but wonder if we're building monuments to our own restlessness. In conclusion, dear listeners, perhaps these parks are more than just places of fun. They're mirrors reflecting our deepest desires and fears. And maybe that's why we're drawn to them, not just for rides or attractions, but for fleeting moments when life feels both exhilaratingly alive and absurdly meaningless. Until next time on the Existential Crisis Hour, remember, life might be one long queue for an unknown destination, but at least there's Wi-Fi along the way.
In the relentless pursuit of profit, where the dreams of capitalism morph into feverish nightmares, we find ourselves at the latest chapter in Target's saga, a tale as old as time, yet more absurd with each iteration. The spectacle begins with the unceremonious exit of CEO Brian Cornell, a once-celebrated savior now stepping down amid slumping sales and a backlash to the company's retreat on diversity and inclusion initiatives. In true corporate fashion, his replacement is Michael Fidelke, a loyal insider groomed for 20 years within Target's walls, a decision that reeks of stagnation rather than innovation. This internal shuffle is but a symptom of a larger malaise, afflicting not just Target, but an entire economic system, teetering on its own foundations. Analysts decry the entrenched groupthink that has led to this point. A company that was once attuned to consumer demands now finds itself adrift in an ocean of irrelevance, losing its grip on delivering what it promises to its American shoppers. The irony is rich. A corporation that rode high on diversity and inclusion rhetoric now faces backlash from all sides after retracting these very commitments. The daughters of one co-founder call it betrayal. Customers drive extra miles to shop elsewhere. It's a grim reminder that in this fever dream, ideals are mere commodities, discarded when they no longer serve the bottom line. As if scripted by some dystopian playwright, tariffs and consumer slowdowns compound Target's woes. The retailer stocks trendier items, non-essentials that languish unsold while consumers flock to essentials like food and household basics at competitors like Walmart. Half of Target's merchandise is discretionary, half imported. Tariffs demand higher prices than rivals can afford or justify. We witness the unraveling. Once lauded for revitalizing brick-and-mortar stores during retail's darkest days, Target thrived during pandemic-induced buying frenzies, only to falter post-pandemic under inflation's cruel weight. Now embroiled in cultural skirmishes over LGBTQ-themed merchandise, every misstep becomes fodder for lawsuits and social media outcry. Fidelke promises improvement, a hollow echo against a cacophony of market forces beyond any single executive's control. Initiatives like Fun 101 aim to inject life back into stores with trendier goods and technological investments. But such measures feel akin to rearranging deck chairs on a sinking ship. In this capitalist fever dream, where growth is gospel and profit paramount above all else, even humanity, the long-term outlook dims not just for Target, but perhaps for us all. As analysts debate whether drastic changes are necessary or even possible, one truth remains. The machine grinds on unabated, indifferent to those crushed beneath its wheels.